Hey, everybody. Welcome to Pittsburgh Comic Podcast number 51, which means next week is our one-year anniversary. But, so, that doesn't mean this isn't a great show. Today, we have an in-store guest. I think it's the first time we've done that. Normally, they have to call in because, well, maybe they don't want to come.
Right.
And then there's some stuff in the news, and we still haven't talked about Avengers, and one person at the table did not care for the Avengers, so we wanted to make sure to include them in our discussion. So, I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics, and sitting with us today is...
I'm Chad Ciccone.
Dave Marinick.
Joe F.
Ryan Sargent.
Adam Russell.
And calling in from Cleveland...
And I'm muting Nick.
Oh, there we go. I was saying, that was a very dramatic pause.
I want to get as much of that relish as possible.
Okay.
I just realized something.
What?
It's a little bit of a downer, but we missed a week of a podcast.
Well, we didn't do one last week because we had the concert.
Two of them.
You did record it, though, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. It was recorded. It's up on the website. It's up on iTunes. I did have to edit part of it.
Yeah,
so
the Penguins playoff.
It was an edit. Yeah, we had. Yeah, we missed a week.
We gotta wait a week.
What?
You gotta wait a week.
For what?
It's not technically 52.
51.1.
We'll worry about that next week.
Jeez. Or no, the last one. Maybe Adam Warrock would be 50.1.
We gotta add them all together and the red chair and make it like a bigger number eventually?
Oh, of course, yeah. We'll jump up to 100 at some point, yeah. When we're not, you know, we'll be at 68 and then suddenly next one will be 100.
That will start right over at
199, too.
No, we'll get to 100, then we'll get to about 110 and realize this is just silly, and then we'll go back to 1.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
This episode isn't going to be in continuity after that.
I'm right.
Lasting for about two more issues.
But I do like the idea of just putting the word new in front of the title.
The new Pittsburgh Comics Podcast.
Fair enough.
That is used a lot. New Avengers. New.
New Dark Avengers. Ooh.
new
looking
dark.
Forward to the new Dark Avengers.
New Dark Avengers Thunderbolt.
New Dark Pittsburgh Podcast.
So yeah, we're off the rails already. We're what, like 2 minutes in? Jeez.
So let's bring it back. With us today, we have local hero and partial owner of Action Lab Comics, Chad Ciccone. Am I saying that right, Chad?
You are.
Welcome.
You.
Welcome. I'm so glad you're joining us.
Thank you for having me, I think.
Yeah, now we've scared him off. Yeah.
Chad's a customer. And a customer at Collins Store, Pittsburgh Comics, and also a creator of such indie favorites as Baby Boomers and the recently published in trade paperback Fracture. Fracture's available in trade at Pittsburgh Comics. Chad's done a few signings recently. He was here on Free Comic Book Day.
Have you recovered? Oh, wait, no, look at that. The hands just gnarled.
Did I say Free Comic? I meant to say Carpal Tunnel Comic Book Day. Did you have a good time on Free Comic Book Day?
I did.
I think you made a lot of new fans that day.
I didn't even see you.
I was just buried beneath all the kids wanting sketch cards. I've been, last several years I've done free sketch cards for all the kids. And this year you had such a crowd that I went home and drew more into the evening and brought
Although it looked
back.
Like it was more superheroes. I remember the one year everybody wanted Snape. And you were like,
that's right.
What? I mean, I know him. I can't
Harry
draw
Potter
him.
And Snape, I did about five times that year.
Yeah.
Wow. Snape's got a good face, though.
Do you want one?
Okay. Why not?
Actually, I noticed with your artwork, there's a heavy Kevin Maguire influence. Like, there's a lot of expressions to the face and, like, a roundness to the artwork. Do you count Maguire as an influence?
Absolutely. My biggest influences are Maguire, Adam Hughes, John Byrne, Art Adams. I mean, I came up in the 70s and 80s, and my artwork is not a lot of heavy blacks. It's line work. I'm a cartoonist. I see the line as opposed to some other artists who do a lot of light and shadow. I'm very much of the cartoony style, and I love the facial expressions, and to be compared to Kevin Maguire is sort of the ultimate compliment to me.
Yeah. You drew two commissions for me this past year, and the Wolverine, I especially noticed in the face that you put a lot of attention into the face, like into the growl, and the eyes especially, actually.
Well, I liked how that one came out, too. I'm really, I mean, it's really good to hear from somebody who you did a piece for that they like it. You know, sometimes you hand it to them and they just kind of like, oh, okay, thanks. But when somebody really likes it, you can tell.
That's what Adam would.
It's really gratifying as an artist.
Cool. Yeah, you drew for Adam. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
The
Peter Parker Spider-Man, right?
Make Peter Parker Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, the sketch card, yeah.
Yep. No, I really like that. I've been actually waiting to ask somebody to make one of those, because when I was at Pittsburgh Comic Con and George Perez was there, I either would ask for Spider-Man or Batman.
Yeah.
And I said, I got to ask somebody to sketch me this Spider-Man, because I had an idea in my head, so I asked you, because I was like, hey, he's doing sketches. And he did. It came out really nice.
Not only are you thought of in the same breath as George Perez,
wow,
you also fulfilled a lifetime fantasy for Adam.
I can die happy.
It wasn't lifetime. It was just thought up not too long ago.
Okay, year long.
I wanted somebody to sketch that, an actual sketch.
Well, I'm glad to have helped.
Yes.
So, for fans that may not be familiar with Fracture, it's the story of a superhero who has multiple personalities, and the personalities are the city's greatest hero, the greatest villain. A lot of times on the podcast, we discuss things like how, you know, there's really only a couple stories that can be told. Man versus man versus himself, man versus his environment. And I thought you really successfully combined elements of man versus man and man versus himself, giving him the multiple personalities.
Well, I have to give credit to the writer I'm working with, Sean Gabarin, who came up with the story. He and I worked together. My input was mostly on design elements and the costumes and the look and feel. He came with a fully fleshed out story to me. And if your listeners aren't familiar with Sean, he's an indie creator who has been putting out a lot of horror comics in a little imprint called Angry Gnome. He's been at Pittsburgh Comic Con for several years. He and his wife put out a lot of horror books, and he wanted to branch out into something not exactly superhero mainstream, but in a world like that. So he and I knew each other from sort of sitting next to each other at shows, and he had approached me several years ago about, I did a couple of two-page stories for him for one of his anthology books for Angry Gnome, and he approached me with this idea and asked if I would want to work with him on this kind of superhero with a twist or off superhero book, and I thought it was an interesting idea, so we started working together on the design elements for the characters, and that was right around the same time that the company that put out the book, Action Lab, formed, involving me and Sean and several other guys. So we sort of looked around at what we wanted our first project to be, or one of the first projects to be, and Sean and I already had this idea going, and we were already into development of the characters and the stories, so it was sort of a natural transition. As Action Lab was forming, we were just getting up and rolling with Fracture, and that became our first marquee production for Action Lab. We did a Kickstarter, and the company and Fracture kind of developed together for the first year.
Oh, Kickstarter, that's really cool.
Yeah.
What did you use to entice your future customers?
Well, our president of Action Lab, Sean Pryor, developed a Kickstarter, and we did the whole video. And this was, Kickstarter is very, very common now. This was a year and a half ago, like late 2010.
Pretty avant-garde back then.
Well, we weren't the originators of it. We knew, I think we were kind of in the 1.5 wave, or the second wave of Kickstarter for comic books. Kickstarter had been around, but there was a creator that the Action Lab guys all know, whose name is Steve Bryant. He's the writer-artist on Athena Voltaire, which some of you guys may be familiar with. And he was sort of the first indie comic creator that we were familiar with who used this new thing, Kickstarter, that none of us had ever heard of. And he wanted to produce more Athena Voltaire. He needed to generate an income for himself, so he asked for, $7,000 through Kickstarter. And it worked. He successfully got that and was able to sort of fund himself to do another volume of Athena Voltaire. And sort of the light bulb went off in our head, because this was right around the time that Action Lab was forming. So we decided, well, let's try this ourselves. So we did a Kickstarter for Fracture, and we came up with the different levels of, rewards for donations. I forget exactly what they were, but it was, you know, your name in the book on the thank you donors page, different copies of the book. We did a special Kickstarter / convention edition with a different cover that only those people or people who bought it directly from us at conventions would get. We had, you know, I gave away original sketches and original art pages for certain levels of donation. And then we had some other premium packs that I'm not remembering at the time. It was 2010. That was 2 years ago. But we were lucky enough to successfully bring in sort of the seed funding to get our printing started. And the ball has been rolling ever since for Action Lab. And Fracture was successful enough to keep us going on to the next book. And here we are 2 years later. So.
You mentioned the design elements. What sort of design elements were you looking for when you were designing the villain and the hero?
Well, in talking to Sean, and I don't want to give away everything about the plot, but you mentioned that this involved a superhero and a supervillain, and in the plot, these two characters are different facets of the personality of. The main character is really the average guy. The superhero is not the main character of this book. The average guy, whose name is Jeff, who's trying to cope with the fact that he discovers he's a superhero at the same time he discovers he's a supervillain. So both of these characters flow from his subconscious. So the design elements we tried to incorporate were almost stereotypical, archetypical superhero designs. The colors we picked for the superhero character, whose name is Virtue, we went back to some of the original superhero characters. If you notice, their costumes have primary colors: red, blue, white. Captain America, Spider-Man, Superman. Blues and reds are the design colors of their costumes because those are primary colors, whereas the villains use secondary colors: purple, green, like Lex Luthor. The Vulture, those types of villains, so that by the very nature of the colors and the schemes of their costumes, you can see who the heroes and who the villains are. So since these characters are springing out of his subconscious, we felt very strongly that they would be almost ridiculously stereotypical in their use of color and design. We went with the standard superhero cowl, the mask, the half-Batman type face mask for the superhero. Although I argued against it, we eventually decided he had to have a cape. I didn't like drawing capes, but we decided this is a stereotypical superhero. He had to have the cape. So his design ended up being the cowl with the blue and white, the broad V design of his outfit with the red cape, almost Superman or Captain America-like for the hero. And then the villain, on the other hand, was going to be obviously a green or a purple. We settled on green, and he was going to have a long trench coat type thing in dark green motifs with, you know, crazy, almost Joker-like red hair, the strange orange goggles. So we tried to go sort of stereotypical with him as well. And those design elements have been extended as we're working on Volume 2, and additional characters are being introduced into the mix. So that was what we talked at length about in terms of the design of the characters. We extended some of that into there's other supervillains in the book, because this book is set in a world where superheroes and villains do exist. These two entities that are part of Jeff's psyche do interact with other superheroes and villains in this world, so there were other designs for those characters as well. And we also talked about how we wanted the look of this book to be reminiscent of older Bronze Age type stuff, not a lot of the brushy, painterly stuff that you see now. That suits my art style as well. I was talking about sort of the line work, and we felt that meshed well with this story, how he wanted it to look in terms of what he wanted the pages to look like. We wanted it to look like, you know, early 70s or late 60s kind of a superhero book, and that suited my style, meshed with that pretty well. So we're pleased with how it came out. I'm obviously wanting to improve my art as I go along to continue, and I think if you look closely at the book, you'll see how, you know, my art at the end of Volume 1 is better than my art at the beginning, and as I'm working on Volume 2 right now, I think and hope I continue to improve with my artwork. So I think the books are getting better as we go along as well.
Volume 2, can you give us any sneak peeks into Volume 2?
I'm not authorized to give away a lot of the plot, but I can tell you that Jeff's psychological situation becomes more complex as we learn that the two characters we see in Volume 1 may not be the extent of his fractured psyche, if you will, and it might be even more crowded in there. And Jeff continues to try to discover what's going on in his head and figure out how to remedy it. We also are introduced to some additional supporting characters on both sides of the spectrum. Jeff finds an ally, sort of a mad scientist type, who thinks he has some methods to help Jeff solve his problems that may or may not work. The character of one of the plot points in Volume 1 is that the superhero part of Jeff's psyche actually has a wife and a child that Jeff doesn't even know. The superhero's wife becomes a more fleshed out, more involved character in Volume 2 and has more to do. She's seen numerous times in Volume 1 and has some interaction, but she becomes more of a fleshed out character with her own motivations and her own things to deal with in Volume 2.
Very cool, very cool. What can you tell us about the collaborative process with you and Mr. Gabrin? Does he typically prepare scripts, full scripts, or does he just give you plots?
No, he gives me full scripts, and I work from the scripts, and the way we work it is he sends me the script for a particular issue, and then I will go on through and thumbnail out the book on just small graph paper, really rough, with stick figures and balloon figures for just the rough positioning of the action on a page, and very little by way of background, just sort of blocks for buildings or whatever. And once I'm completed laying out the entire issue, I'll send that to both Sean and our Action Labs creative director, who serves as kind of a quasi-editor for us, because Sean is also the editor-in-chief of Action Lab. But we do think there's something to be gained by having another set of eyes on it. So Dave DeWanch, who's the creative director of Action Lab for our book, Sean's and mine, since Sean's the editor for a lot of the other books, Dave serves as a kind of a quasi-editor for our book. So I'll email the thumbnails to them, and we'll get on the Skype, because Sean is local. He lives about an hour from here, but Dave is located in San Francisco. So we'll get on, and we'll go over my thumbnails, and Sean will give me input, and he likes that, he doesn't like that. Dave will give me some notes as well. You know, the action doesn't work for this. Flip this panel, make this bigger, make this action more broad, or we'll talk it through, and we'll just make sure, yeah, there's room for the dialogue balloons there, and we'll talk through the whole issue, and they'll give me notes. Then I'll go back with my thumbnails and the notes, and then I will pencil the issue, and I work sort of hybrid. I do half traditional and half digital. I'll scan in my thumbnails, and then I'll print those out in blue line on full-size Bristol board. My thumbnails are just 8.5 by 11 on graph paper. And I'll print out a blue line version of my thumbnail at full size with some computer. I'll take it in Photoshop and move some of my thumbnails around and change the size of stuff. And I'll put the panel borders in straight using Photoshop, because I'm really just roughing it when I do the thumbnails. And then I'll fully pencil a page. And I pencil fairly tightly, even though I ink myself. Some people, when they pencil, if they're inking themselves, they do it pretty loose. For some reason, I always pencil pretty tightly. And then we'll do another pass, and I'll send all the pencils to Sean and Dave. And if there's any last-minute changes of something they didn't think I got right or something that's a problem, they can give me some more notes, because it's easier to fix on pencils than inks. And then I'll do the same process again. I'll scan my pencils, print them out in blue line, and then I ink over the pencils, and then it's ready to go to the colorist. I do not color the book. Dave DeWanch colored Volume 1, but we have a different colorist for Volume 2 whose name is Leo Garcia, and he's working on Volume 2 right now.
Is he East Coast or West Coast?
He is South Coast. He's in either Mexico or Venezuela. I've never met him.
Worldwide Action Lab. That's is right. Worldwide.
That's right. We are spread out all over in terms of the people working on the other books. We've got people from all over the country.
How did that come together?
Well, Action Lab came together in general It really sprang out of some acquaintances and some discussions amongst a group of friends at Heroes Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina in 2010, which was in June of 2010. At the time, I had been working a little bit with Sean Gabron for his independent label, Angry Gnome. I had also been working with a guy named Sean Pryor, who's now the president of Action Lab. He had a small imprint of his own called PKD Media. I was the penciler on a book called Mercury and the Merg, which is kind of a buddy cop comedy that PKD Media was putting out. And so Sean Pryor and I were at Heroes for PKD Media. Sean Gabron was not there, but Dave Duanch, who was just a friend and acquaintance of ours, was also there with some books that he was doing for another independent label and just his own personal prints and things. And Sunday night after the show, we were all sitting there at the hotel bar and, you know, commiserating about how can we take our books to the next level. We were talking about the fact that when you're doing your own books and you're your own editor, you're your own letterer, you're your own colorist, you're your own printer, you're your own everything, you can reach a certain level of quality, but there's kind of a ceiling to how good you can make the book look in terms of your individual finances and your ability to do everything yourself. So we had the maybe good idea of saying, well, look, maybe we could pull our resources, and we got 4, 5, 6 guys we know. Maybe we could just all work together and act as each other's editors and find a different way to print these things and kind of all elevate each other's work to kind of the next level of professionalism and make something better for ourselves and expand our reach. And at that point, it was like, get into Diamond and get national distribution. So that started our minds flowing along these lines. And eventually, late in 2010, we formed a company called Action Lab Entertainment. And it was Sean Pryor, who I was working with at PKD Media, who is very good at marketing and promotion and interfacing with the public. So he's our president. I came in and I brought another friend of mine in with me as, you know, part owners. And my friend has some business experience, non-comic book, but he runs a couple of businesses. So he said, we need somebody with some business sense. I brought him on board with us.
Dave, is that Sean Pryor?
No, Sean Pryor is our president. Brian Teton is the name of my friend. He's local here. I've known him since high school, and he owns a couple of businesses. So he and I came in.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. Dave Duanch, as I mentioned, is our creative director, and he lives in California, and he has done a lot of other projects and had an ongoing webcomic called Spacetime Condominium that he had been doing for several years. And Sean Gabron came in with us. So that was the five people who started Action Lab in late 2010. So Fracture was not our absolute first book. Dave Duanch had a graphic novel that he had done called Back in the Day. And that was our first book that we released at all under the Action Lab banner. Back in the Day was not nationally marketed through Diamond. We weren't in Diamond at the time. Fracture has the distinction of being the first Action Lab book that was nationally marketed through the direct market through the Diamond catalog. So our first major milestone at Action Lab was, oh, we want to get in Diamond. Because that kind of separates you from a lot of the indie crowd of, you know, people who are great making great books, but, you know, people tying books up with yarn and doing them on a Xerox machine and that type of thing, the indie comics crowd. We wanted to show that as independent creators, we could make something that was comparable in quality to what almost anybody else was putting out. We have continued to move towards that. We're not satisfied with where we are yet, but getting into Diamond was a very big step for us. Now staying in Diamond and getting our sales numbers to where we want them to be is part of our ongoing process. And then the next step for us at that time was, okay, now we want to make sure that Action Lab doesn't just become a vanity press where all we're doing is printing our own books. So Dave Duanch, our creative director, started actively looking for other projects that we could publish through Action Lab. And we found a number of those, and one of the ones that's been so far a great success for us is a book called Princeless that I was mentioning to you earlier. And that's a book was written by a guy in North Carolina and penciled by a woman who lives, I believe, in Georgia. And that came about at that same convention, Heroes Convention 2010. Dave Duanch was there, and seated next to him, we were, I was across the convention hall from Dave, and I knew Dave, so we hung out together and you know, went out to dinner and things. But the guy who just happened to be sitting next to him was a guy named Jeremy Whitley, who happened to be the writer of this indie book that he had sitting there called Princeless. And Dave took a look at it, and they talked about it, and, you know, talked about, well, the art you have here might not work with this story, and what can we do? And it really didn't go anywhere until 6 months later when we had Action Lab up and running, and we started saying, well, let's find somebody else's books so that we don't just have this vanity press. We're only printing our own books here. Dave said, wait a minute. I know this guy from back at Heroes Con, and he gave Jeremy a call, and we actually hooked him up with this artist. This artist for Princeless was somebody who had worked with Sean Gabrin on some other projects earlier. So we kind of said, hey, this woman's art would work very well with this story. So we put them together, and they did a four-issue series for us called Princeless. And it, it's been, I think, our most successful book to date in terms of sales numbers and, you know, interest in the comics community. And we never even dreamed, but it's received 2 Eisner nominations. And it just last weekend received 3 Glyph Awards for books that, you know, have African-American characters or are produced by African-American writers. And we're, you know, we're thrilled with that success, and we're really trying to just ride the coattails of that and find our next project to capitalize on that popularity. And we've got another book coming out next month that Dave Dwanch wrote, but which is drawn by a guy who's not too far from here. I think he lives in West Virginia, close to here. His name is Bill Blankenship. A book called Double Jumpers. And that's actually issue 1. Is I was talking to
next week.
Colin is going to hit stores next week. And
you
that,
carry that one, Colin?
Yep.
All right.
That Princeless, I will tell you, is it's a phenomenal story. It's an all-ages book. It's about a princess who's locked up in a tower, the old stereotypical awaiting rescue by a prince. She decides she's having none of that, finds a sword, breaks free, befriends the dragon that's guarding her, and sets off to save her sisters. There's a lot of good social commentary in there about, you know, empowering young women and saving yourself and all that thing. It's a beautiful all-ages story. Double Jumpers is the exact opposite. We did not want to be...
It's about a prince locked up.
Oh. No. I mean, we love all-ages books, and we are going to have all-ages books as part of our library, but we want to not be pigeonholed as only an all-ages company. So Double Jumpers is very calculated by us as the exact opposite of Princeless. It is offensive on any number of levels. It is rude. There is inappropriate language. There is inappropriate, probably some nudity in there. Some nudity that you probably don't want to see in there. So we are braced for some backlash as to Princeless, but we think it's very important to show that, look, we want to bring comics to the world at both ends of the spectrum. But the thing about Double Jumpers is it's hilarious. It is a raunchy, bawdy story about a group of software developers who are developing the next big MMO, and at a convention in Las Vegas, through a computer glitch, they become transposed with their in-game characters. And conversely, the in-game characters are transposed into their bodies in the real world. So we have these folks that are stuck in this medieval sword and sorcery video game with unable to get themselves out, while at the same time their video game characters are inhabiting their bodies and wreaking havoc on Las Vegas. Hence the title of Double Jumpers.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and we've got more stuff coming down the pike, and we continue to. It's been a grand experiment for us. We've made mistakes. We're actually printing our own books. We bought our own printing equipment because the price of printing was almost prohibitive to us getting into the market. So we just kind of bit the bullet and said, we're going to buy our own printer. So we're actually printing our own books, and it's been a learning process. We're not professional printers, and we've been experimenting with the size of our books. We've been doing most of our books in this digest size for now. We're going to be switching that up to be bringing out full-size trades, and we're still sort of trying to find the perfect niche in terms of how we can expand our sales and expand our reach and what the right price points are. So we're not immune to making mistakes and missteps in terms of, you know, Colin was yelling at me about he thinks the books are too small. Well,
too small for the price.
That's
that
right. Well, we want to. We're going to be bringing out larger size trades, and we still don't want to abandon the digest size because for Princeless, we think it worked perfectly. I want to see a fracture trade at full size, and we're working out, you know, do the sales support that? You know, what's the price points for that? We're looking at printing options, all those sorts of things. So it's been a Herculean effort, but we're extremely excited about where we are. We could never have even imagined or hoped that a year from our first book being in the comic store, we'd be nominated for an Eisner. So I'm not taking any personal credit, not having drawn the book. I mean, I wish it was Fracture, but as one of the publishers, as one of the owners of Action Lab, I mean, we couldn't be more excited about that. We think and we hope that's put us into a different level. I mean, every time, you know, we've had our books reported on in CBR and you know, the very mainstream comics press. When I turn on Google in the morning and see an article on CBR that says Princeless and Ultimate Spider-Man lead the Glyph Awards for 2012. Like, we're running in some pretty good company there.
A high tide raises all boats.
That's right. So, I mean, we're very excited about where we're going, and we're, you know, we're just trying to feel out, you know, how do we work conventions, and we've been at a number of conventions this year, and we're going to be at a bunch more, and we're trying to figure out, like, how we get all our inventory to these conventions, and we're how we get the books into the hands of the people who need them. Jeremy Whitley, the writer of Princeless, has been doing a bunch of signings, and we're like, we need more books. I'm selling books. I need more. And just managing inventory and all that stuff, it's all very challenging, but it's an exciting challenge. So.
Let's talk more about conventions. You mentioned Heroes Con a number of times, which I know is coming up on a week or two or three.
June 22nd or so.
Or 1 month.
Yeah,
1 month.
About a month.
I saw you at Pittsburgh Comic Con this year, and I saw that you were on the list for Mid-Ohio Con in September. What sort of things are you doing at conventions to bring in the people?
Well, I will be at Heroes Convention this year. I will be representing Action Lab. So I'm transitioning from, I used to go to shows just as Chad Ciccone artist, and I would have my little sketch cards and my prints, and so I'm trying to fine-tune how I work this table, because I'm going to be the only one there. We'll have a couple friends there who can help me at Heroes Con, but the portion of the table that's Chad Ciccone artist and the portion of the table that's Action Lab books is shifting, because we now have a pretty full inventory of 10, 12 different books that we've had in the last year, whereas last year we were there at Pittsburgh Con in 2011 as Action Lab, but we had one book. We had Fracture and Back in the Day sitting there. So it was Chad Ciccone artists and prints and things for most of the table and Action Lab over here. Now Action Lab has 12, 15 books, so we've got a whole table of stuff, and Chad Ciccone artists is over here, and that's fine with me. I'm working for the success of Action Lab at this point, and Chad Ciccone artist can go along with that. That's fine with me. So at Heroes Con, I will have the full spate of Action Lab material at the table. I will also have Chad Ciccone artwork there, and can, you know, do commissions and things, but I'm hoping to try to sell Fracture trades and Fracture single issues and Princeless and Snowed In, our horror story, and X-01 and the Rock Solid Steelbots, our big action Transformers type book, and Space Time Condo, Dave's webcomic that we have done a collected edition for, and all the Action Lab books. So I'll be kind of repping Action Lab at Heroes. Action Lab will be at San Diego Comic Con. I will not be there personally, but Dave DeWanch and Jeremy Whitley, the Eisner Award nominated, the writer of the Eisner Award nominated book Princeless, will be there, not only for the Eisner ceremony, but he will be helping Dave rep for Action Lab at San Diego. We will be having a very big presence at Baltimore this year. I think almost all of the Action Lab owners and several creators will be there. We have sprung for a big corner booth at Baltimore, so we're probably going to have four or five people behind the table. Hopefully, you know, I'll be able to sell the Fractures, and Jeremy will be selling the Princesses, and Dave will be selling his books there, too. We had a great show last year in Baltimore, and the Baltimore crowd was... I was there the year before, just as Chad Ciccone artist, but the crowd in Baltimore in 2011 was must have been twice to three times the size of the Baltimore crowd in 2010. And if it stays the same this year, Baltimore is going to be an amazing show for us. I am an invited guest at Mid-Ohio Con. They called me, and I guess that's a wizard show.
Yeah, that's a wizard show now.
Yeah, I think what happened is I had been to Mid-Ohio Con a couple of years ago, and I didn't have a great show there. This was before Action Lab, and so I didn't go back. So I think when Wizard bought it, they tried to sort of find some people who used to come and didn't, and kind of called them up and said, can we give you a free table this year and make you an invited guest to get you back here? Mm-hmm. I don't have any illusions that I'm some big draw that Wizard was looking for. But they called me, and they offered me a table, so I'll go if you give me a free table. So Chad Ciccone / Action Lab will be at Mid-Ohio Con this year. We're also going to have a presence at the Denver Comic Con, which is sometime in June. I must admit, I don't know the exact dates. And there are a couple of other smaller shows. So we are trying to get out to a bunch of different conventions to spread the gospel of Action Lab, and we're getting really favorable, positive response from everybody. I mean, people are going nuts for Princeless. We've gotten good positive reviews on Fracture, and all of our other stuff. Double Jumpers, I think we're going to get positive reviews and hate mail on at the same time, and that's good.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, you know, one more thing before we move on to talking about the Avengers. This is Pittsburgh Comics Podcast. We're here in Collins Store. I wanted to ask you, if we were trapped here during a zombie infestation, what would you use as a weapon to fight your way out?
Probably just trying to shove the rest of you guys at the zombies and use you as human shields, because I am fully understanding of the old adage of, you know, I don't have to run faster than the Tyrannosaurus to live. I only have to run faster than you.
That's called pooling a notice.
That's right.
All right. That's Chad Ciccone, partial owner of Action Lab Comics, which is home to Eisner-nominated Princeless and upcoming Double Jumpers. And out now, in trade, available at Pittsburgh Comics, is the Fracture story.
And Princeless.
Princeless, yeah.
Thanks so much, Chad.
And the whole repertoire.
That's right. Check out actionlabcomics.com. And one thing I also want to plug is, on Free Comic Book Day this year, we did release a 200-page digital sampler of all the books I talked about and more, called Action Lab Confidential. It is a free download. You can get it directly from our website, actionlabcomics.com. You can also get it at Comics Plus on the iPad, and graphically, mydigitalcomics.com and drivethroughcomics.com. We are very, very large supporters of the direct market comics retailers, and we are committed to having our books in print, but the realities of the world being what they are, we are also releasing our books digitally for those customers who might not have a great comic shop like Pittsburgh Comics in their neighborhood.
Now you're just sucking up.
Or who might live hundreds of miles from the nearest comic shop. We don't want those people to miss out on Action Lab stuff. So all of our books are available digitally on Comics Plus. We just had one new release, as I said, the Action Lab Confidential, which is a free download. So check that out if you want to see. There's 10, 12-page samples of all the books I just talked about. And what we hope is you'll download Action Lab Confidential, take a look at it, and if you have a comic shop in your area, go buy them or demand that they order them. And if you don't, download them off of Comics Plus.
Shout out to Collins Comics customers that do drive over 100 miles to get here every couple weeks. Justin Huntsman, doesn't he drive a long time?
Yeah, some guys come out Ohio and West Virginia. Because they're crazy.
Can you stick around and talk Avengers with us?
What time is it? Yeah, I can stick around for a bit. I might have to slip out of here in about a half hour or so, but I saw Avengers and I have opinions.
Did you love it?
I did love it.
Who's the breakout character to you?
Uh, I liked how Captain America interacted with the rest of them. I was dubious and wondering how they were going to pull that off.
Uh-huh.
But I thought Cap came off very well. I know everybody's going to say the Hulk.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I must admit, I've never been a huge fan of the Hulk, although in the movie he was fine, but I like Cap.
I like the way that they played him as the man out of time and, like, you know, he didn't get every reference, and when he got the one, oh, I got that one.
Yes. Yeah. So I was a Cap fan in the movie.
Ryan's the lunatic that didn't like it.
We'll get to him last.
Yeah.
Save if there's Ryan, time. Save
Did everybody else see it? Yeah. Everyone's shaking their heads.
No, I like the amount of humor. I was not expecting that. I think it was needed because I think just a powerful, you know, action would have been tiresome over, what was it, like over 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought the amount of the humor I thought was very, very well done. And, you know, people are going, oh, it's Whedon. I'm like, okay, but you know, it had to be set up. But just the little throwaway lines, the little, you know, Thor had a bunch of just little lines that were just, you know, he didn't say a lot, but I thought they did a great job setting up the relationships through the fights, like when Thor and Iron Man were fighting and Cap kind of showed up and stopped.
I thought everybody had their place.
I did see it at 3 in the morning, so I could be by, you know, skewed.
I saw the midnight show,
yeah,
too.
But
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think that everybody had their place in the movie. Like, you know, you had your action guys like Thor and Hulk. You had, you know, Captain America who could just walk out, you know, like a normal person into, like, a party. And he was okay. You know, just everybody seemed to have, like, who they were supposed to be, the type of person they needed to be. And I agree with you about Cap, though. Cap was one of my favorite characters, I think, in the whole thing. It was kind of odd, though, how they played him up. Because you don't see it. It's not necessarily it was a bad thing. But they show him up as being the leader. But he isn't as used as a leader usually is. But it worked, you know. So I was all for that. So, but I all in all, I just love the movie.
Nick,
to challenge the humans is to court death. That line was awesome.
Oh, I thought you were making a statement. Okay, I'm sorry.
That was after the credits, right?
Are you threatening us?
He just hears us, that's all. He knows our power.
Yeah, at first I thought you were talking about the Hulk being the breakout character.
I went to 3D IMAX with about 12 people. None of them had read a comic book in their life. So at the end of the movie, after we stayed, they were like, "Who's that?" And I'm like, "Do you really want to know?" Like, yeah, I could go on about it. No, I was actually really impressed with Black Widow. I thought that they really, in this movie, much more than the Iron Man movie, showed what makes her special. And that's not that she's just a, you know, a gymnast-level fighter or the guns or anything like that. It's her psychological abilities to lie and to manipulate to get information like a real spy was really cool and shown in a very, you know, direct way a few times.
Colin, you had a good point about Black Widow that you said. Wasn't it you who were saying that it seemed kind of odd her out in the middle of this alien fight?
Well, yeah, she's out there fighting and she has two pistols. You know, it just seemed she was a little under prepared to be taking on an alien invasion. You know, maybe, you know, she should have had that big gun that Coulson had. You know, that might have been a little more effective.
But she earned her spot there. I mean,
yeah, but how
she
that
did, but
for
I'm
Coulson?
Just saying her in the street. You know,
it worked out pretty well.
Ping, ping, ping. You know, it really wasn't doing a whole lot.
Get her some armor at least.
Yeah. That's all. That seemed a little silly to me. Okay, now the dissenting opinion.
Oh, geez. Now, see, everyone thinks I was trying to rain on the parade, and that's not. I didn't hate the.
Get
Avengers.
Him, everybody!
No, online you said it was the worst movie you ever saw.
Oh, obviously, yeah. No. So everyone thinks that I hated the Avengers. I didn't hate it. It just. I did not think that it was as great as a lot of other people think it is. I wasn't. I guess I just didn't feel surprised by the movie. I felt like a lot of things had been given away, and I avoided spoilers. I did not know what was going to happen. I did not know, you know, certain characters would not perhaps make it through the rest of the movie. I didn't know any of that. I just didn't feel very surprised by it. It felt very by the numbers from the previous movies, from Iron Man 1 and 2 and everything else. Everything that I knew was going to happen was going to happen. We're going to have, you know, We're going to get them all together. They're going to have to fight each other, because that happens in superhero comics anyway. They're going to decide that fighting with each other is a waste of time, and then they're going to win, which I know is the basic premise for every superhero movie. I just felt like this Marvel movie, out of the rest, felt... I don't know if I want to say rushed. I guess it just didn't feel as personal as the other movies. In Iron Man 1, I felt it was easier to connect with Tony, as I understand it's an ensemble.
Because you're
movie,
drunk.
So.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right, exactly. No, no, I'm sorry.
Usually I pass out in the corner in the comic shop with my Grant Morrison stack, you know, piled around me. But
you brought up Morrison.
I did. I have to bring it up once every show. So I guess I just feel like there were maybe there were things I was expecting from this movie that maybe I was disappointed in that I didn't know I was expecting until after I saw the movie. I didn't really care for Black Widow or Hawkeye as characters. I thought they were really boring. I like Hawkeye in, you know, the cartoons. I like him in the comic books.
Don't get me started on
Well, yeah, which comic book should you read with Hawkeye?
You know what's funny about Hawkeye, though? How you're saying, though, that he was kind of boring?
Yeah.
He was only used as that little, you know, brainwashed
right. Well,
throughout the whole thing, which is funny because they've been playing him up in every book, like
right.
Trying to get us to like him.
I was really excited that
or something. And
yeah, well, I was excited that he was in Thor because it was kind of like Scarlett Johansson's you know, appearance in Iron Man 2. It was like, okay, they're building the bigger universe. They're going to use these other characters that the audiences might not know about, and they're going to establish them in another character's movie, and then they can get big somewhere else. But I guess I was disappointed that I felt like to make him seem cool to the audience, they had to make him a bad guy for half the movie. And
yeah.
I didn't really understand either how Loki's power. I understand Loki's power mostly was coming from the staff, but doesn't he have power of his own? They didn't really explain whether he was stripped of his power when he got kicked out of Asgard in Thor, and so maybe there were just some loose ends from the other movies that they didn't pick up on. I really wanted them to touch on the idea that Tony Stark's Iron Man armor is kind of descended from Norse technology. The Hydra based their technology on the cube. Howard Stark based his technology on Hydra's, and Tony based his technology on Howard's. So, to me, I extrapolated that as being, okay, well, the Iron Man armor is kind of like three generations removed from Norse technology. And they didn't really talk about that. Maybe that's something they'll go into in Iron Man 3 or Thor 2, but Colin's shaking his head.
I'm saying, you're thinking way too much.
Actually, that's a good point, the way that you're saying it was based on Norse technology. But you know what, Ryan, I gotta tell you, I totally disagree with you. I mean, were you not alive during the 80s and the 70s
no.
for the countless, the countless terrible iterations of Marvel to film that I saw in years
past.
Who
was thinking about not being alive during that decade?
How dare I not be alive yet? No.
I mean, don't you think that they've successfully captured the same feeling as the early books where they started building in the single books and then brought them all together, took the best elements of all of those individual movies and combined them into this massive juggernaut of a film?
Very excited about this.
Okay, no. Get off the chair, Joe.
No, I think they very successfully did take all of these characters from all of these different movies that a lot of people have probably never read the comic books, weren't familiar with the characters until they saw the movies, and they successfully put them into one movie, and they were a team, and while I did feel bored at some parts, I never felt that the characters didn't get along with the way they should. I never felt that the characterization was terribly off. That being said, it definitely was a Whedon movie, and they're being far removed from the other movies. The directorial style, the writing style, was completely different from, say, the way Captain America was, or Incredible Hulk. And that's the difference of having Whedon on the movie. I guess I just felt that it didn't feel like one of Whedon's projects that he was really into. To me, it felt like something, well, that was the case, is that they had a script and then they called Whedon and said, will you come in and rewrite it a little bit?
I read an interesting article discussing or speculating as to why this movie has been so successful.
Right.
And I'll paraphrase what I remember the article, but the point of the article was that because of the political climate and the global climate in the world of what's going on right now.
Right.
This is the perfect movie in that, you know, in a world where nobody likes politicians, nobody believes anybody's trying to help anybody, everybody's a cynic, a movie that is a fastball right down the middle where the heroes aren't conflicted about wanting to do good, yeah. where people aren't at war with themselves, where even when Tony Stark and Cap are bickering right. about how they should go about things, you really believe that both of them are heroes and want to do the right thing and want to help other people. You know, Tony Stark is this guy who's a millionaire, has $1 billion, but has had this epiphany, and he just wants to help the world with his technology. And Cap is just straight down the middle,
right.
positing that
he's a soldier.
What the world needed and what the world wanted out of a superhero movie at this time in our history
yeah.
was you don't want to see Batman, who's like at war with himself, and yeah. all this dark psychological stuff, and this hero who everybody thinks is a villain. That what people want to see is a hero who's a hero, yeah. and a group that's a group that, like, rah, 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 is going to save us.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I found that an interesting analysis, and I think I agree with it.
Yeah, and I do think that's a good analysis, and I see where they're coming from when saying that, and I think that is why it's successful. And I think the movie is successful in showing that, too, but maybe that's just not what I wanted. You know, like you were saying, I am really looking forward to Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
Especially from the standpoint of, I like the psychological deconstruction they're doing of Bruce Wayne and Batman in those movies. I enjoy that. And Avengers is great as a, you know, turn off your mind, let's go blow up some aliens. It's like, if there could be a thematic sequel to Independence Day, it's Avengers.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that, and I enjoyed it for that, but I guess I was just, maybe I was looking for more where I shouldn't have been looking for more.
I think if the last half hour hadn't been such a big payoff, a lot of people would be saying the movie was too long and boring.
Right,
on the first, like, you were at the very edge after the first hour of going, this is dragging a little bit. But the payoff was so big that you forget that, and you're like, oh, it was great.
And it's been so marketed. You know, it's been marketed since, what? What was the first movie it was marketed? Iron Man?
Iron Man 1.
Iron Man 1. You know, and it just keeps, it just keeps going on, and everybody's like, what is this? What is this? What is this? And finally it comes out, and, you know, everybody's, you know, all for it. But yeah. truthfully, if they didn't do that, I probably would think it was kind of just a basic superhero movie.
If it wasn't
as played up as much. I mean, it's been played up. It's, you know, it's everywhere. I mean, they're even playing up in our books by forcing it down our throats. They're,
whoa.
You know, well, they are. But, yeah, there was a lot of just marketing throughout it.
Oh, definitely. Well, I mean, even you have the farmers insurance commercials.
Yeah.
I think it was when Tony crashed into the street, there was a big farmer sign behind him, and it was brought to, you know, Marvel Studios, Marvel's The Avengers Assemble by Marvel was brought to you by farmers. That's what I was waiting for.
And I find it funny that it's J. Jonah Jameson from the Spider-Man
right?
movie.
Yeah. So, I didn't hate the movie. Maybe
is he allowed to be in those commercials? Wait a minute.
Screws up the movie continuity.
Right. Maybe it just wasn't what I was.
Who knew the farmer's insurance commercial?
Fair enough. You go see your fancy Swedish dubbed films that you like.
Yeah, see the original version of Let the Right One In. Don't see the American version.
I just thought the movie was really fun, and I can't remember the last time I had so much fun
at a movie.
Seeing a movie since maybe when I was a kid, seeing Star Wars: Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You know, I think they did capture that feeling of making us feel childlike.
You're too young to know that feeling.
Jeez, I know, because I never saw it in the theater.
You idiot.
Maybe. Maybe it's a fact, you know, maybe the first issue I ever picked up was Avengers T21 in 1982, and I never never thought I'd see all these characters together.
I did feel strangely nostalgic watching the film, even though it was like completely modern and the special effect. Like, it felt old to me, like, maybe you're getting at it. I'm like, I never thought I would see this happening on a screen in front of me. Like, I loved Avengers when I was growing up in the 70s, and like, oh. But to see this playing out on a screen with, like, all the modern special effects and blockbuster stuff happening just kind of triggered something that was like, oh, it feels nostalgic to me.
Yeah, like, you have noticed you don't have any. Well, no, I'm just saying.
You hate it, Ryan.
What are you, Ryan? 22? 23?
I'm 23. Now.
Yeah, so, I mean, you just.
You know, I didn't grow up with the, you know, original Stan Lee Avengers comics.
You grew up with the Fox cartoon.
No, that's the first time I'd heard of
you grew
Avengers.
Up with Avengers wearing black leather jackets.
Heroes Reborn.
Wow. See, I read mostly DC as a kid, and I'm still mostly a DC person. I'm picking up a few more. Well, I actually just Daredevil right now, but I'm like Daredevil. I know he's an Avenger, but I'm reading a solo book. But I'm trying to think the first
who
time I encountered
Avenger?
The Avengers.
How angry must
life.
They be over at Warner right now? Like.
Well, I can imagine, yeah, you know, they've kind of got beaten to the punch, you know? they were going to do a Justice League movie, and then it kind of got canned.
Yeah, and 8 months ago it was like,
yeah.
Josh, we don't need you, buddy.
Oh, yeah, when they told him, yeah, they told him, you know,
forget about that whole Wonder Woman thing.
Wonder Woman, yeah. So I'm sure they're kicking themselves. But and I think that was the argument originally against Avengers, was you cannot take six characters that no one has ever seen in a movie before, or only seen in one movie, six separate movies, and put them into one movie and have it work. And they did.
Imagine what you could do with the Justice League using this exact same formula. Movie, 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 individual movie, individual movie, individual movie, right. Justice League.
It was just masterful.
But now if they do it now, they're just ripping off Marvel. Like, they almost can't do it now.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did a World's Finest Movie first. That fly really bothered
finally.
Me.
Finally.
It was a fly robot.
I don't know what it was. Ew. Yeah.
It was the Green Hornet.
Collins just killed a massive
Two things, though, I want to mention about the movie. One is kind of just a really nerdy thing that I think everybody's probably already thought of, though, but... First of all, they never said Avengers Assemble throughout the whole movie.
I felt ripped off. I did.
Yeah, and that is expected from any...
No.
Yeah, just that little part, which really was sucks for them, to tell you the truth. The other thing was, it was just a matter of preference, though. And I understand why they did it, because it was for marketing. And that was calling it... Having them called the Avengers Initiative before Coulson died. Because I think that scene where he says, you know, now they'll have something, and then everybody's like, to avenge. I think it would have had a better impact if they weren't already called the Avengers. Because why were they called the Avengers to begin with before he said it? If that was a reason, that would have been a cool reason to have him say that. Mm-hmm. Was that he could have said, now they have something to avenge, and that's why they're the Avengers. They're avenging, you know... Not just this, but, you know, things like this that happened to Coulson. I thought that was cool, but I thought it didn't have the same impact as it would, being that they already called it throughout the previous movies, the Avengers Initiative.
So is Coulson dead?
No.
No.
I doubt it.
I read an interesting speculation that he's going to come back as the Vision.
Oh, man!
And the evidence was... Let me think. The Scarlet Witch was, at some point in history, a cellist.
Uh-huh.
And there was a reference in the scene with Pepper Potts about Coulson dating a cellist from Seattle, and there was some connection with Scarlet Witch in Seattle.
That would be cool.
I read something about this, that was the speculation. And if you look at the actor who plays Coulson, like, you could see him...
Totally.
Visually representing the Vision.
The Vision is a creation of Hank Pym, right?
Yeah.
He's an android created by Hank Pym, somehow through Ultron.
Well, there was also some reference to a life model decoy in the movie. Uh-huh. And the other thing was...
I like how that was mentioned, though. Life model decoy.
Yuri referred to Coulson as his one good eye at some point in the movie.
I did.
Speculation... Pulling together its straws, but who knows?
That would be interesting.
I really like
that
actor.
Kind of...
I like that actor, and I wish they would find a way to bring him back, because he was good.
I guess there's another issue I had in the movie. In that... I know. I know.
Negative
Nancy. I know it's a summer movie. I know I should turn my mind
Isn't this college job?
I guess I just felt that...
You might find yourself uninvited. You know,
30 to 100-ish S.H.I.E.L.D. soldiers bite it before Coulson dies, and Captain America could care less about teaming up with Iron Man. Coulson dies, and everyone's like, oh, we gotta team up. And I know it's because they all knew him, and he's the handler and everything. But I think it was at that point in the movie...
the cards, man.
I'll get that. I think it was that point in the script, though. That's when I felt Whedon... That was Whedon's point where he pinpointed, was like, okay, this is where the audience is starting to get boring, and this is where the characters need more motivation. So I'm going to do what I usually do in my stories, and I'm going to kill somebody that everybody likes, and then give a reason for the plot to move forward, which is fine. I've just seen Whedon do that a lot of times in Serenity and Buffy and everything else he's done.
You have a lot of issues with Whedon.
I do. I don't like when every single character is witty. I know that's his shtick.
Well, I read an interview with Whedon that said, I know people are going to blame me for this, but... He claims that was in there when they brought it to him.
Okay, well,
that it wasn't his. It wasn't him.
Every character was
going to
be likable.
No, that Coulson was going to die.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, That may be. I can see that. But I.
But that's what I would say if I were him, too.
Yeah. as the ensemble movie, I can see why they would turn all the characters up to 11, though. Like, Tony Stark was incredibly more sarcastic in this movie than he was in Iron Man 1 and 2 combined, which fits his character. I think Scarlett Johansson's snarkiness bothered me. I just didn't buy her performance.
What'd you all think of Ruffalo as Banner?
Oh, he was great, though. Yeah. That was my favorite part of the movie. I thought he was amazing.
He got it right.
Yeah, he was good.
Now, I'm hearing rumors now that they're saying that he was so well-received that they're going to fast-track a Hulk movie with him in it. If they do, that's fine. I would like to see that.
But I don't think the Hulk... I've never thought the Hulk could support a movie.
Like,
back
Hulk works
off.
Well yeah. with other yeah. people.
Hulk is... best Hulk as staff. A supporting character yeah. in my view.
Maybe that's
in comics too. I've never liked the Hulk comic book. I've always liked the Hulk as this force that comes into somebody else's book that they have to deal with. Who
right. You know, there's a lot
stuff.
Of characters like that that people I agree that you know, like Deadpool.
Yeah.
I don't like Deadpool on his own. But when they put Deadpool into like something else and they throw him as into the background, I like that. Hulk is the same way.
This is blasphemy, but I feel that way about Wolverine.
Oh, I was about to say, they're all looking for
even
the next Wolverine, you know, the
you,
one
you
the one breakout
X-Men?
Character
no,
that can support
No, in X-Men
so.
As one character among many, that's great, but I don't...
But
I
as
don't,
a team yeah. on the X-Men, you don't see it.
No,
as a solo character.
I got it all.
As a team, as one character in a team, I think
it all
fine.
Depends on what they can do with it, but I think, you know... I think Marvel is kind of running out of things to do with Wolverine. Plus, they quickly, you know, well, they said it when they made the origin story, that they're like, I think it was Joe Quesada who said that he, you know, they were worried when they made Origin because, okay, you're finally giving him
that was the whole point of the whole story
is he was a mystery.
Okay, but here's the thing. They were running out of things to do with Wolverine, and that is what gave way to the modern interpretation of Wolverine as the headmaster of the school, as the elder who's guiding the younger mutants.
He didn't jump that quick. it's still had a lot.
But that is an evolution in Wolverine's character. He's gone from being somebody who doesn't want to be a leader... who is content to take orders if he needs to and then be alone because that's what he prefers, to now he's taken the responsibility to actually kind of teach these kids. Mm-hmm. Whereas I kind of agree with you about Hulk, and by kind of, I mean, I do agree with you about Hulk, is that he does seem better as a supporting character because all the main stories about Hulk, especially in the two movies before Avengers, has all focused on, okay, the only conflict this guy has is whether he's going to be himself or this raging monster. And they kind of introduced in Avengers how... like the way Ruffalo played Banner and Hulk, he was both of them, and he was fine, and he accepted that. And maybe that's just another evolution of the character they need to get over. Maybe, like, you know, you're saying with Wolverine,
Hulk's also
kind of taking him to this next level. Maybe they just need to take Hulk to the next level.
I love stories that go to the next level. I love stories that advance the plot. I hate to just see the origin retread over and over again. I'm going to really hate it if they redo Spider-Man's origin in that movie coming out this summer.
Well, they are.
I've seen that origin a million times.
That's exactly what they're doing.
When I was
and they're also changing it to involve of his parents being spies and all that
that's
crap.
Ultimate. That's the ultimate origin. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I was watching that preview.
I'm sorry,
Avengers.
Yeah.
Aww.
Our guests have said
there's
worse.
No F bombs like Ryan that throws out all the time.
Watching that preview in Avengers, though, I kept watching it, and I was like, didn't I just see this movie? It's, you know, the origin of Spider-Man, you know? Whether or not you change it a little bit and put a new bad guy in there, it's still the origin of Spider-Man. There's only so many ways you can tell it.
There are ways to do a reboot without retreading the origin story, and I don't think Hollywood quite understands that yet.
Yeah.
Because almost, even with, you know, new runs of creators on comic books, we still get little flashbacks to the origins. Or, you know, anytime they do a number one comic, they might mention, oh, you know, I was dipped in radioactive ooze, or I got bitten by a radioactive giant bat, or something like that.
One of the beauties to me of the Avengers was that they were not burdened with having to do the origin story.
Yeah.
And they even still had to do it a little bit for Black Widow and Hawkeye. But
and that was another.
I mean, can you imagine if they'd have had to done it for everybody? Like,
right.
You like couldn't make this movie without having made all the other movies first.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You couldn't do it like just bring the Avengers out
first.
And I was thinking, actually, I was talking to Ryan not too long ago about making a Justice League movie. And with the new Batman movie, I don't think you could do that. You couldn't, first of all, you'd have to reboot Batman.
Yeah, in order to set Batman in a movie that there's no other superheroes in. Like, yeah. You can't.
That's what Nolan wanted, too.
Hi, I'm Superman.
I'm Batman.
Yeah, they grounded him too much.
Where are the drugs?
There was a great, if anybody's ever seen after the movie, or How It Should Have Ended, I think it's called How It Should Have Ended. It's a little cartoon series that I've seen on YouTube. And yeah. They did one for Dark Knight. And Batman's talking to Gordon. He's like, I have to go protect the city. And then Superman shows up and he's like, hello, Batman. And he's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, I just took care of the Joker. And he was like, what do you mean? Forever. What did you do? I threw him into space. I'm going to go save a plane crash and a space shuttle crash and all these other things that you can't do. I'm going to climb to the top of the building. And, you know, they can't.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for coming. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. I'm sorry I have to depart. I had a great time.
That's Chad Ciccone, Fracture.
Tacos next week.
Excellent.
So if you want to come back.
Yes, tacos.
Yeah, well, you're bringing
Jeremy Vaughn?
Yeah, with store credit. Wait, no.
Have fun, guys.
See you.
Thanks, Chad. Chad.
I think.
If enough, man.
I'm not going to put it down this time, I promise.
I'm going to switch seats. I just can't stand it.
No, I just want to sit here. Avengers was really successful, so I know, you know, Marvel's going to make a second one, but Hollywood's going to see, you know, they've carried on the superhero bandwagon to the point where they experimented with the origin movies, now they've gotten into sequels, now they've gotten into the ensemble movies. I think they're going to have to start treating these as, like, the Ocean's 11 of action movies, of superhero movies. You know, I think if they want to do a Justice League movie, they're going to have to realize that they're either going to have to do what Marvel did and set up all the characters, or get really big name actors to come in to draw people in without setting it up first. You know,
and you also can't make. I don't think you can make as dark and realistic as a Batman as Christopher Nolan did.
I don't think it would work.
Well, it might. I mean, if you do it.
It's really interesting because Batman is a tortured character, but in Dark Knight, he's almost... They explore him psychologically almost as much as I would say Marvel explores their characters.
Right. Well, I think what you'd have a different Batman, only in the sense that you have two Punishers.
Right.
There's the dark, brooding Punisher Max Punisher, and then there's... Not that the regular Punisher isn't, but he's not as...
Yeah.
As dark. So I think just a less... Yeah, less of a Batman who's more of a detective, a planner.
Right.
I foresaw this problem, that kind of guy, as opposed to the tortured soul. The
emo Batman.
Because even some of his like Joker, when you put Joker against the Justice League, it always seemed a little odd.
Yeah.
You know where. So I think they can do it. They just need to change things up. Get more of a George Clooney bet. No, I'm sorry. We'll
the first villain will be, Starro?
Starro. Oh, yes. Yeah,
that'd work. Sure, I can see that on the big screen. Yeah, giant starfish.
I'm wondering if...
Wouldn't be as bad as that snake thing in Avengers, okay?
Well, I'm just wondering if Hollywood is going to embrace the difference between the Marvel movies and if Warner Brothers actually is going to see the difference between their property and Marvel's property in that Marvel's characters have always been more human than DC's characters. DC's characters are... mythical and godlike.
Yeah.
And if they play to that, I think they could be fine making a Justice League movie as long as they don't remove the characters too far from the audience. So, I don't know.
Okay. Moving on. One more thing I wanted to talk about, just because it's been in the news. It's been all over every website. The first book hit today.
Buying stock in Facebook?
No, not buying stock in Facebook. But
Astonishing X-Men?
Yeah, no. Well, yes, Astonishing X-Men. X-Men. But it's is it the Summer of Gay in comics?
Summer of Gay.
I don't know what you... It's just so funny that over the weekend... I mean, we've known that the North Star thing was going on.
Yeah, as an X-Men
it's
fan.
It's not
as a
big
huge
news.
X-Men
Yes.
Fan.
All right. This kind of started when the X-Men moved from the semi-non-tolerant New York suburb of Westchester to the most accepting city in America, San Francisco. And kind of like what this is that gay of this era, being gay is like being an outcast. Like in the era that we were growing up, there were a lot of racial undertones to the X-Men. And it meant being outside of society, you know, was being a minority, being a racial minority was looked at as, you know, outside of society back then.
in the 80s, and to somewhat extent also in the 90s, because they were so fully immersed in what the 80s were based on.
Okay.
All right? But in the modern era, it is... I mean, this generation is colorblind. It's not cool to be a racist. Across the board, you ask anybody in this store, is it cool to be a racist? You're going to get the same answer from everybody.
Don't ask Adam.
No, I mean, it's universally accepted.
Sure. My problem with the thing is, could they have picked the most least likable character in the Marvel Universe? Who's a North Star fan? He's an arrogant French-Canadian.
Nick?
Oh, Nick?
No.
Oh, okay. But I mean, he's an arrogant French Canadian guy who I thought was dead.
My third favorite.
He was resurrected.
Flight character.
Yeah. So it's just one of those.
Hold on. Who's number one and two, Nick?
I like Vindicator and what's his name and Sasquatch.
Okay.
No Puck?
Yeah, Puck.
I mean, since he's got out of hell, that's kind of cool. But
he punched Wolverine in the nuts.
Yeah. Well, he's a ten.
Hey now, wait a minute.
That's okay.
But so I just, when I saw it, I'm just like, who's going to rally behind this guy who's just...
The North Star fan base.
My other problem is, he only kind of reappeared like 2 issues ago in Astonishing. It's not like he's been in the book forever. He just popped up in the current story arc. So it's just, it felt very forced.
In and out of the X-Men titles for about 10 years. I think what Marvel's trying to do here is they're trying to give respect to gay people who number 4% of the population, and look at the X-Men as something of a rallying point.
But it just seemed an odd one character to do with it, and I don't want to give everything away with the issue, but I flipped through the issue to see what was going on, because we also got the postcards with the next issue. I have wedding invites and stuff, and so I flipped through it, and I don't want to give away all the plot or anything. But in essence, he proposes to the boyfriend, and the boyfriend says no. And that's the end. So I'm trying to figure out how in the world this next issue is going to have a wedding when we didn't even have an acceptance in the there's a lot is going to have to happen.
Sounds like a story that you're going to have to read. What I'm trying to say, Colin, is when North Star came out, 10 years ago.
Sure.
It was like a stereotypical comic book moment where he's like standing up flexing, saying that he's gay.
Next
thing, and they're trying to humanize the characters and tell a story, tell a story of what actual people might be going through. Somebody might not accept at first. They might have to wrestle with the decision.
I just wish this was done more in the Claremont fashion.
Uh-huh.
Where North Star comes out, the storyline kind of goes along for a year, he's meeting people, things are happening, and then all of a sudden this naturally comes out of it, where this just feels very, I don't want to say forced, but just kind of, I have this North Star gets married storyline, okay, we'll put it in Astonishing X-Men, because they couldn't
figure out where to put it.
I wish it was just more a natural evolution of the character, just in a storyline, as opposed to 2 issues after he's reintroduced, after being gone for however long. All of a sudden, and he's getting married, and we're going to make a big event, and we want stores to have parties, and it just
that's just the norm anymore for Marvel.
Well, that's true. For issue 51, why didn't you do this in issue 50?
Because they can't do 52,
true.
I'm not familiar with how Astonishing goes. I
don't think Marvel is either.
I thought Astonishing didn't have anything to do with the main continuity.
Well, it does, because Whedon's book did.
Yeah,
but it didn't at its time. I mean, it did.
I didn't think when it first came out that it was part of the main continuity.
And then, Ellis got hold of it, didn't he? Because Ellis wrote after Whedon, and then after Ellis was, I don't even know.
It was Nick Bradshaw with writing behind. Yeah, Greg Pak.
Pak.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, it meandered for a while, and then.
And the other thing I wasn't familiar with.
A little longer.
When exactly did North Star? When did they announce that he was gay to begin with?
This was
a long time.
Yeah, 1999.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, it is something that they have mentioned, but, I don't know. Right. I haven't been reading the book, so I guess has it not been, played up that he was even going to anywhere at
as
all
soon
that
as
he
they
was going
to
propose?
San Francisco, he became entrenched in a relationship with this Kyle character who was a regular human, and North Star had to steal time away from the school to get to the mainland. It was a story told in some X Nation. It was like an, it was like a backstory. Yeah, it was like the Marvel used like you know X Nation
Marvel and their mini series.
Some of those other stories that were told by indie creators, like small stories told by indie creators. They actually had Tim Fish, who's one of the more prominent creators in gay comics, tell the story, and tell one of the stories that advanced the plot pretty heavily. But yeah, the Kyle Northstar relationship has been going on for a while.
Okay, because they did have that actually in Ultimate X-Men. He was actually in a relationship with Colossus, because Colossus and the Ultimate X-Men was gay.
That was established in the first or second issue.
Yeah. And then one of them died, if I remember. One of them died.
I don't remember.
I think it was Northstar, and Colossus was all...
That was really
dangerous. He lost his mind or
then.
Something.
Yeah, that was a dangerous idea.
Yeah.
And then you have DC.
Then we just had, what was it, almost just over the weekend,
yeah.
I think
over
it was.
Well, it was at the Kapow Comic-Con in Britain.
Yeah, where they announced they were going to, prominent icon, and then all of a sudden they kind of, I don't know if they slipped or not, but said he, you know.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So all of a sudden everybody's like, ooh, who's it going to be?
Now,
prominent,
is it Big Six?
I don't know.
Well,
or prominent as in it's, you know,
well,
it's around the Big Six
the
area.
Not scary, but the odd thing is the reintroduce. So you assume it's someone that hasn't been in the new 52.
Well, I have a theory.
And there's only one that I can think of, and Nick is going to be so excited about it. So.
Who?
Wally West.
That's what I'm thinking. Well, okay, did anyone read...
Where would he
can't
come from,
Wally West?
Exactly. No, it doesn't. And actually, I talked to Stuart at DC, and he's like, no, that would create too many problems just with family and kids and all that. But I thought that would be fun to have the internet go, no, you know, because everybody wants Wally back.
But didn't they establish that in Citizen Cold, the Flashpoint tie-in? It just came to me today, and I did not have a chance to dig out my issue, but I vaguely remember them implying that he was in a relationship with Pied Piper in the Citizen Cold miniseries in Flashpoint.
Wally West?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because then Wally died in the second issue of Citizen Cold,
right.
And it was supposed to be like, oh no!
That's
Pied
one
Piper
I didn't died. Read.
I read that one for the Scott Collins art, which was amazing, but I need to go home and dig that out.
Yeah, let's go look.
But, you know, you said that they said that it's Wally. But maybe it will turn out to be Wally.
Well, he didn't know.
See,
he didn't know.
I've been mainly thinking Big Six. That it's,
right. That,
you know, the only thing I was kept on. Well, I kept thinking, I was like, okay, it won't be Batman or Superman.
No.
Because that would cause, not necessarily because they were, that, you know, that they'd make the character gay and that would cause controversy. But changing the character of Batman and Superman altogether would cause controversy.
You
couldn't do it. I couldn't see Green Lantern because I just couldn't see how Jordan fitting into that. That would change
the whole
that
thing
character
with Carol Danvers or Carol Ferris would be too weird.
I couldn't see anything with Barry Allen. I don't know why, but I just can't see it.
Patty Spivitt right now.
Yeah.
Too, so.
And then Aquaman is married to Mira.
Right.
And I couldn't see that. The only character that left was
Martian
Wonder
Manhunter.
Well, it doesn't. That's not how Martians work.
And you know this how?
You just don't understand.
You're getting it.
We don't have long enough of a podcast for this discussion. Anyways.
Am I correct?
I was going to.
Wonder Woman?
Yeah, I was kept thinking Wonder Woman until they said he. So that threw off my whole theory of saying. Because I thought if Wonder Woman, I couldn't see it either way. If they made a Wonder Woman, I would have been like, okay, whatever. You know? I mean, she's from, you know, a nation that's all women.
Yeah. Is it Booster, maybe? I mean, they haven't...
Well, that's not iconic. That's not an
iconic
DC character.
He's been introduced.
Anybody suggest Peter David on Facebook? He suggested...
Peter David? Is he one of the Big Six?
He suggested Alfred or Jimmy Olsen.
Jimmy Olsen, I can see.
Those are pretty prominent characters.
That makes sense.
I guess... who did I just suggest?
Well, with the Justin Bieber haircut.
I've been told that it's a character that has yet to be introduced in the comics.
Right, okay.
So...
You mean at all?
Maybe it'll be Vibe, since they already teased Vibe in the comic book page.
Oh, yeah, because Vibe is an iconic character.
He's so iconic. like,
but one thing, another one that's come up is the Atom.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Red Tornado.
Well, Ray Palmer's already been in. Unless it's Ryan Choi. I don't know.
Right, I think
that
it
means
might.
We wouldn't have a new 52 identity crisis, so there's that.
I hope if it's Red right. Tornado, it's like the Brave and the Bold
oh,
cartoon.
Oh, wait, no,
Red
I
Tornado.
Got it. Elongated, man.
Oh, man. The jokes would write themselves.
Not only that, but can you imagine people that were already enraged at them killing Sue Dibney? Would they kill Sue, but they've also invalidated the relationship. People would tear the internet in half.
Now, I did see somewhere, somebody said Plastic Man, actually. Which would kind of actually work with Winky, whatever his name is. Winky like Wonks, or whatever his name is. Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
What's his name? Come on, you're on the computer. Look it up, Nick.
I think it is Woozy Winks. Nick?
Woozy Winks. Okay, I was so close. Oh,
jeez, could you be any more off?
No, either.
Woozy Winks.
But
you know his real name is Wolfgang, right?
Oh, Wolfgang Woozy Winks, because that makes the name a lot more silly.
That's better.
Yeah.
Esquire.
The concern with both companies is that. You know, that this is being done as a natural extension or evolution of the character, not just as trying to stay relevant. You know, people criticized Marvel when they made Miles Morales, you know, a black Hispanic character, you know, because people argue that they're just doing it to try and stay relevant. It's just a gimmick to get people interested in buying the comic to say, look, we're diverse, we can do this. And, you know...
That's how they say it.
Two black characters.
Yeah, exactly. So... You know, that is the concern here. I mean, if it's like when they introduced Batwoman during 52, they were all like, oh, and she's a lesbian. She's in the Bat family and she's a lesbian. And Greg Rucka was like, I didn't write her so you could market her as such. You know, that just happened to be how he wrote the character. It just was a natural extension of the character to her. Mm-hmm. And when he wrote it, it wasn't really a big deal. If anyone's read the Batwoman series and even the newer Batwoman series, it's not really a big deal. I mean, she's dating Maggie Sawyer, but it's not like every issue she says... Well, I'm a lesbian, so things are harder for me. You know, it's...
Yeah, it was more a story about subtle, a superhero who happened to be a lesbian than a story about a lesbian who happened to be a superhero.
Right. The tension in their relationship is not so much that they're lesbians and trying to deal with that. It's that, you know, Maggie Sawyer's captain of Major Crimes Unit and Batwoman is an outlaw. And how do you juggle your private relationship with her and then go out and avoid her and her police goons every day? Which is interesting. So I worry that it's going to turn into these... gimmicky things. Hopefully it won't. But.
You know,
to me, there's a huge difference between creating a gay character and making an established character all of a sudden gay.
Yes.
As a storyline point. One is exploitative and one is a fine, natural, you know, way to create a character.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. Miles Morales, if you were to make Peter Parker black, that's kind of weird. If you create Miles Morales, that makes sense. It's a new character. So I just think that, to me, the difference between exploitative and shock and trying to be in, you know, the USA Today on Tuesday before the Wednesday comics, that's when you say, well, we're going to make this character with all this baggage, all this stuff. We're going to invalidate those other stories. We're going to graft this on it because it gets us on in the mainstream press faster.
Did you hear this Astonishing X-Men thing about the wedding and everything? Did you hear how they were marketing it? They were putting it up as on the news where they mentioned it.
How?
It was on The View. And I was like, what in the world?
Did
like,
anyone watch it? Do they have,
well,
like,
you know, the retired, you know, older women, you know, that don't have their soap operas anymore. They were very... You know, touched by this X-Men gay wedding, which made them come to their local comic book stores and
Joy Behar. In the last couple of years, Marvel and DC have been trying to like one up each other every other week, and USA
The View
Today.
Doesn't.
And I really wanted to ask, when has USA Today become this like forefront of news journalism? Like
it is to travelers.
Yeah,
you're staying in a hotel,
right?
You're getting your USA Today.
Well, I know at college in the student.
Well, there's
center,
no more wizard, so
right.
Well,
it's the next best thing.
So it's USA. Like at my college, they carried, you know, free copies in the student
center. Yeah, we did too.
USA Today, and then we had like the Newcastle Herald or whatever. But I think a lot of people in my college only read USA Today because that was it. You know, that was what you could read if you wanted to read a newspaper, and that
was it. If you were Amish,
and
you were allowed to read that?
Basically, yeah. And way up there in Amish country.
But it just astonishes me. They're like, oh, we just announced in USA Today. It's a landmark announcement. And I'm like, in USA Today? Really? Like, it's a very colorful newspaper. There's lots of colors. It's easy to tell what section you're in. It's green. I'm in the money section. Ooh. And so, whatever. I don't know. They're going to start making, like, a four-color comic section or something like that.
Sweet.
I'm going to stop.
No, I just had a thought that maybe it's Green Arrow because it's Oliver Queen, and they'll bring back... This way they can bring back his beard that everybody's been complaining about. So.
And the sense he's going to be like, this completely conflicts with what I wrote in my first issue. And,
That's why his marriage with Dinah never worked out, because...
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The star of CW's Arrow, you mean?
Yes.
Right.
That's on Fast Track.
Woo! Because I love my CW shows.
Yeah.
What's the CW?
You've been living under a rock the past 10 years.
One of those channels I don't stop
it's
on.
It's the place where Smallville limped on for years.
Oh.
For a decade.
When the WB crashed, it like hopped on to...
Right.
It was holding on by a thread.
Right. Did anybody see they announced today officially the Dark Knight Returns 2-part animated film?
Hmm. Yep. They did mention that actually before.
Yeah, they mentioned it, but they never like officially.
Yeah, they never officially.
It was unofficial.
It was unofficial, apparently. Yeah, but they had some screenshots, and Peter Weller is doing the voice of Batman, which I'm kind of excited about. So he played RoboCop, if nobody knows who Peter Weller is. But
he was Buckaroo Banzai.
Yes, he was. That was an amazing.
Wow, that was a long time ago. Because the last I saw, he was on in the last season of Dexter.
Oh yeah,
and he's much older.
RoboCop?
He did a lot of History Channel stuff too. Mm-hmm. He's the president of some history institute, I think. But
he was on 24 first season.
Was he? Okay. I just, if he tells one of the gang leaders, dead or alive, they're coming with him, I'll just be excited. The RoboCop line.
Wasn't he like actually?
Sorry, Colin and I just had a small staring contest, and I don't know why.
Wasn't he actually, like, skilled at spinning the gun?
Yeah, he said he learned how to, spin the gun on his finger for RoboCop.
And that's why they used... why they used it, because he actually could do that.
Oh, okay, I don't know.
I could be wrong.
You know who was involved with the RoboCop movies?
Paul Verhoeven?
Frank Miller.
Oh, he was. That's right, I forgot about that. Yeah, he was in the second movie. He was the drug chemist.
RoboCop.
He wrote the second movie and the third movie.
And then he got really bitter about it. Yeah.
Well, that's why he disappeared from comics for a while. He went to Hollywood.
Well, and that's actually what brought him back, too. He said he had such a poor, negative experience with writing RoboCop that is why he wrote something that was so violent, so visually entrenched in the comics art form that it would never, ever, ever be made into a movie, and that was Sin City.
I was going to say Holy Terror.
Sin City was then made into a movie.
Right, and now they just announced Sin City 2.
That's cool. Same director?
Yes, finally!
Robert Rodriguez, Frank Miller's coming back to write it, and I guess Jess Gal was coming back, and I guess Mickey Rourke, even though I'd heard that Mickey Rourke complained that the prosthetics that he wore were too much. It was too much, and he hated it, and it was awful, and it wasn't worth it, but he's coming back. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No.
Like, we'll give you $5 more to wear that awful
Who are they trying to get
better wine. Cool.
Yeah, they wanted to get
Did
her.
Did they get her?
They didn't say yet.
Yeah, I remember it had been rumored for a long time.
For the dame to kill for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the neat thing is they don't have to get, Clive Owen.
Because he's completely different in that story.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Okay, I think we're good. Next week, special anniversary. No, I don't know.
Special taco edition.
Taco edition.
Taco edition.
And we'll have more fun next week?
Maybe.
Okay, well, maybe. I know Jeremy will be here. So.
Bad Jeremy.
See ya.
Than a bullet leaping buildings in a single bound. Came from out the shadows, cause that's how we get down. I'm in your town. Walk between billionaires and evil scientists. Sorcerer supreme, all the teenagers are buying this. Gamma radiation, nobody could mess with this. Hold steady with venomous symbiotes in my penmanship. Your friendly neighborhood MC back on the scene. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. All I'm seeing is green and red and blue. I hold the shield for America. When a soldier out Siberia, rocking any microphone that's near to ya. Clobbering it till in the coffin you sit. Agenda for extinction, bring out the horsemen of the apocalypse. Part of an evil brotherhood, acolytes that believe. Super friends who make beats and cats that MC. It's the area code to the planet that we protect. The Infinity Watch is now back in effect. Now, put
your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's scheming on that doomsday tip. That's how we do it. Superpowered MC who can spit. That's how we do it. Superhuman on these tracks that I flip. Yeah, cause you ain't seen it quite like this.
Because
that's how we do it in the 616. My ruby quartz shades and my colored rings. Laser scope rifles ain't concerned with them other things. These rappers wanna talk about ice chains and fancy cars. Me, I'm trying to build mansion in Asgard and fund the Hellfire Society. Studio with Cerebro, mind patterns and rhyme, cause I rap about what I feel though. You hear the rhythm and you're hearing the track. I'm here to take you back to days of future past in my raps. I'm the Stan Lee of the streets, demand things when I speak like your attention and respect when I jam these in the beats. And my tape deck pops, my mixtapes still rock. They're in your system, that's what Soundwave's telling me on the block. Ricky Bobby Drake's the only ice that I rock with, and mental telepathy is the only style that I talk with. Close your eyes, you can listen up in your mind. During this song, been freestyling there the whole time. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's scheming on that doomsday tip. That's how we do it. Superpowered MC who can spit. That's how we do it. Superhuman on these tracks that I flip. Yeah, cause you ain't seen it quite like this.
Because
that's how we do it in the 616. I wanna go Pietro on these cats, right? Yeah. Spitting a rhythm that nobody's getting. I'm down to the infinite watches. The wisdom will baffle these women and children. I'm ripping tracks. I go Mark 5 with a power pack. Hawkeye, what I'm aiming at. Stop time, watch your chain react. Can't lie, I'm a brainiac. Little they know, I'm stealing the show. I'm filling the streets, unlimited flow. The second of Doc Ock when I'm killing it, yo. Please, shots to your chest. You're rocking a vest like Cable did. I'm hungry as Wally West at a kitchen table. Nobody will save you, kid. I'm Frank with a gun. I'm Hank with his son. I'm Wob when I skip lunch. Eating rappers, man, so thanks for the gum. I'm Stark's wallet back before all these banks had a run. I'm Lex Luthor when I rap. I'm trying to blank out the sun. Cause all I see are friendly faces and shifty eyes. Keeping these anonymous commenters honest. Making them realize. You love to hate me on the net when I try. That's why you get no love when you're up on my block. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's scheming on that doomsday tip. That's how we do it. Superpowered MC who can spit. That's how we do it. Superhuman.